And now, reading and writing and radio.
My name is Jimmy Myers. What's yours?
Ophelia Gibbs, said Ophelia. Cordelia Gibbs, said Cordelia.
Ophelia! Cordelia! What sort of comic book did your folks find those in?
Twin, Cordelia said with dignity, I find this dull and muddy mettled rascal most tedious.
Be gone, you scullion, said Ophelia. You rampalion, you fustularian, I'll tickle your catastrophe.
Jimmy's mouth fell open. I cannot abide a gaping pig, Cordelia said. They started off again.
Hey, wait, wait!
Jimmy ran alongside them. A grin spread over his face.
Hey, that's neat. Say some more.
Why should we, you scullion, you rampalion, you fustularian? Ophelia repeated.
Scullion!
Jimmy's tone was admiring. Fustularian.
Fustularian! Hey, that's neat. Wait till I try that on the guys at school. Hey, maybe girls aren't so bad after all. Where'd you get that neat stuff?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host for the program is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Today, all you trolls, troglodytes, bashy bazooks, and blistering barnacles listening out there, I want to talk about a fine art that has been sadly neglected. No, not sadly neglected. It's being done all the time. It's just not being done as a fine art. It's poorly done, very poorly done, shoddily done, in most writing and in most of our speech. And that is the fine art of the vivid insult of calling names. Oh, you say, haven't you already in earlier programs talked about name-calling and how it hurts and asked us to write about when we called names or when we were called names and sticks and stones can break my bones but names can never hurt me? But of course they can, and often worse than the sticks and stones. And I'll say, sure, true, true, all true. But we're thinking about being writers, and people do insult each other and call names, and they also use exclamations of surprise, of dismay, of disgust, of approval. People swear and curse and use slang. And if we're going to write well, we mustn't ignore this important aspect of our speech. We should practice it and develop it. We should hone it to a fine edge and master the art of the incredible insult, the startling oath, the lively exclamation. Mostly our vocabularies are so dull, especially when it comes to swearing, cursing, vulgarities, obscenities, blasphemies, crude or offensive language. Now, I'm not going to go into all those with examples. I don't want to be cut off the air, though you've heard a lot of those words those are the definitions of by third grade or so. And the definitions are very interesting. And if you look them up, you will find that the dictionaries don't agree on what is a vulgarity, what is an obscenity, a blasphemy, swearing, cursing, and all that sort of thing. But whatever these exclamations are, why, adults and kids alike mostly use all the same old tired words over and over and over again. When I was first married, we lived in a paper shack, which was fastened to a row of paper shacks in a war village, and we could hear every word that the people next door said. And day after day, the husband would get up in the morning, and all the time he was shaving and getting dressed and eating his breakfast, he told his wife what he thought of her. And it wasn't very nice language, but it was incredibly dull. Day after day, the same language. And then one day, he called her a different word. And she absolutely exploded. She blew her stack. I'm not going to tell you what the word was, but for 3 days, from her, we heard the most marvelous language telling him off. It was a real treat. She had a lot more imagination,
when it came to insulting language than he did. Well, this dullness is true not only of swearing words, but of any expression. Certain words come into vogue. They're in words, and we call them slang or jargon. We all use it. Neat or neato, cool, yuck, gross. When I was growing up, everything was swell. This was swell, that was swell. Now, if you hear it or read it, swell sounds funny. It sounds dated. You hear it in old movies and in books that are written in England where they're trying to make the Americans sound like Americans and haven't kept up. It dates the book. And slang and swearing dates our expressions. There's a whole section in an adult book by C.P. Snow where he describes the various people in his college at Oxford and how he can tell their age by the kind of slang and swearing that they use. I've heard, for instance, and read that in the 1920s, before I was born, that people said 23 skidoo. Now, don't ask me what it means, but that was an expression that people used at that time. I recognized the problem of slang and the dating of slang in my book, The Pale-Faced Redskins, and kids have asked me occasionally why I had my kids in the book saying what they did. For instance, they say cabbage, or they say hot spit, or things of that sort. And the reason that I did this is because I didn't want the book dated. I didn't want somebody to be able to say, oh, that takes place in about that time. And so I figured by making up the slang, and why shouldn't the kids say cabbage or hot spit instead of gosh, gee, golly, or stronger language, that this would keep the book seeming more contemporary. I've found that most vulgar words and swear words are pretty boring after the initial shock has worn off. It takes imagination to think up vivid and interesting oaths and insults. Shakespeare, of course, was great at vivid expression and at vulgar language. That's why I used him in Missing Melinda, which I read at the start, and that neat stuff that Jimmy liked so well, dull and muddy mettled rascal, rampalian, fustularian, gaping pig. No wonder he was filled with admiration for the twins. But let's go to one of our family's favorite characters in a present-day series of books, the Tintin books, and that is Captain Haddock. Now, Captain Haddock is an old sea dog, and he is a lovable sot, and he cries when things go a little wrong, blistering barnacles. A bit worse, and it becomes billions of blistering barnacles. And so it builds up until finally, when things are as bad as they can possibly be, he roars, billions of bilious blue blistering barnacles in a thundering typhoon. When his whiskey bottle is broken by the Arabs, he takes out after the raiders over the desert, barehanded, bawling, swine, jellyfish, tramps, troglodytes, toffee noses, savages, Aztecs, toads, carpet sellers, iconoclasts, rats, moniglots, ectoplasms, freshwater swabs, cannibals, bashy bazooks, caterpillars, cowards, baboons, parasites, pockmarks. I looked up troglodyte and bashy bazook once, figuring they were made up words, but no, they're perfectly legitimate with excellent meanings, and they're great to yell at your friends. So then I searched out a French copy of Tintin, since that's the language the books were originally written in, figuring that somebody had to translate those expletives into English, and what sort of words did Hergé, the author, have in the original? I found troglodyte and bashy bazook. Now, Haddock's language has become part of our own family language, and I grin to myself when I hear Demi, for instance, saying in a moment of mild frustration, well, blistering barnacles. And I shouldn't leave out the Asterix books either. Asterix is a Gaul. That means he's a Frenchman, and he lives in 50 BC. Both Tintin and Asterix are comic books, by the way. And the characters in Asterix all swear by the gods of their own country.
Our heroes, the Gauls, say, by Teutates, or by Belenos, or by Bellissima. But the Romans, who are always the bad guys, the enemies, they swear by Jupiter, and the Greeks swear by Zeus, and we learn the gods of the Etruscans and the Egyptians and the Goths and all the other tribes and peoples in this manner. And it's great fun to see the kind of swearing that the authors of Asterix give to these comic book characters that lived in 50 B.C. Another favorite book of ours is How to Be Top, which is written as if by a schoolboy, Nigel Molesworth. And he uses various English expressions, but he makes some up, too. Heg, heg, and chiz. Most of the younger students he calls wets and weeds, and every now and then they say yarbu sucks. And in Latin, they often exclaim ehu, ehu, which means alas, alas. In Dr. Doolittle, there's a pretty good insult. Jip the dog gets impatient with Gub Gub the pig, who is always thinking about his stomach and is generally a nuisance. And he snarls at one point, "You stupid piece of warm bacon." Then you're familiar with Snuffy Smith in the comic strip, and he uses very vivid language. And one of my favorites is when he says, "Great balls of fire." And great frith. I'm totally forgetting the title of this broadcast. Frith in a Fog, isn't it? Let me tell you a little about Frith in a Fog. In Richard Adams's Watership Down, the rabbits have their own language called lapine or lapine. There are a number of lapine words used in the story. A hoodoodoo is any motor vehicle, be it a car, a tractor, or a train. To silflay is to go above ground to graze. To pass hraka is to make rabbit pellets, what we call going to the bathroom. And the rabbits have their own slang, oaths, and interjections, formed pretty much the way we humans form ours. Their god is the sun, and they call him Frith, and they exclaim Frith or Frithra, plus all sorts of variations on this. Great Frith, Frith in a barn, Frith in a fog. And they use the word sometimes as a prayer and sometimes as a curse, just as people do when we use the word God in a prayer as well as sometimes in swearing. I'd like to read a bit of rich language to you from a book called Titus Groan from the Gormenghast Trilogy by Mervyn Peake. Swelter, the cook of the Gormenghast Castle, is a huge man, and he is surrounded by young boys, the apprentice cooks, in the palace kitchen. And he is addressing them, and he starts out by calling them this name. "Gallstones," said Swelter, and in the dimness he flung his arms apart so that the buttons of his tunic were torn away, one of them whizzing across the room and stunning a cockroach on the opposite wall. "Close your ranks and close your ranks and listen most attentive some." "That's the way, that's just the way," said Swelter. "Now we're quite a happy little family, most select and advanced. Now tell me this, my stenching cherubs, tell me this and tell me extra quickly. Who am I? Now tell me extra quickly." "Swelter," they cried, "Swelter, sir, Swelter." "Is that all you know?" came the voice. "Is that all you know, my little sea of faces? Silence now, and listen well to me, chief cook of Gormenghast, man and boy, 40 years, fair and foul, rain or shine, sand and sawdust, hags and stags, and all the rest of them done to a turn and spread with sauce of aloes and a dash of prickling pepper." "With a dash of prickling pepper," yelled the apprentices, hugging themselves and each other in turn. "Silence," roared the chief. "Silence, my pretty warts. Silence, my belching angels. Come closer here, come closer with your little creamy faces, and I'll tell you who I am. And then I'll sing you a song, and you will know who's singing to you, my ghastly little ineffectual fillets." A song," came the shrill chorus. "Firstly," said the chef, leaning forward and dropping each confidential word like a cannonball smeared with syrup, "firstly, I am none other than Abiathet Swelter, which means
for you would not know that I am the symbol of both excellence and plenty. Who did I say I was? Abifer Swelter, came the scream. The chief leaned back on his swollen legs and drew the corners of his mouth down until they lost themselves among the shadows of his hot dewlaps. Abiatha, he repeated slowly, stressing the central A. Abiatha, what did I say my name was? Abiatha, came the scream again. That's right, Abiatha. Are you listening, my pretty vermin? Are you listening? Where's Steerpike? Steerpike, Steerpike, yelled the youths. He's somewhere here, sir. Oh, there he is, sir. There he is, behind the pillar, sir. Silence, bellowed the chef, turning his gourd of a head in the direction of the pointed hands as the high-shouldered boy was pushed forward. Here he is, sir. Here he is, sir. The boy Steerpike looked impossibly small as he stood beneath the monstrous monument. I shall sing to you, Steerpike, to you, whispered the cook, reeling and supporting himself with one hand against the stone pillar that was glistening with condensed heat, little trickles of moisture moving down its fluted side. To you, the newcomer, the blue mummer and the slug of summer, to you, the hideous and insidious and appallingly cretinous goat in a house of stenches. Well, there is a lot of insults to not only the apprentices but to the boy, Steerpike, and I could go on. He calls him my ray of addled sunshine. He mentions his little measly legs, how inconsequential he is, all sorts of horrid names that he gives to Steerpike, my core of curdled cat bile, to you alone, so hearken diligentiums. Are you hearkening? And so the insults go on. I played a game once with a group of friends, a dictionary game where we would find a word that nobody knew the meaning of, and then everyone would make up a meaning and make it sound legitimate, as if it were the true meaning of the word, and then we would all try to guess which was the actual true meaning. Well, the word scut, S-C-U-T, came up, and my meaning, which was not the real meaning, I was quite proud of. It was an insult so subtle that it is not perceived as such by the receiver. That means that the person can't tell they're being insulted because the insult is not clear enough to them. And here again in Gormenghast, the doctor of the castle busily insults his sister all the time, but she never recognizes that she's being insulted. When I ask you a question, Alfred, I say, when I ask you a question, Alfred, I like to think that you can be civil enough, even if you are my brother, to answer me instead of smirking to yourself. Sister mine, he said, since thus you are, forgive if you can your brother. He waits breathlessly your answer to his question. It is this, my turtle dove. What did you say to him? For he has forgotten so utterly that were his death dependent on it, he would be forced to live with you, his fruit drop, with you alone. So Irma never listens to find out whether she is being insulted or not. Today, let's try some exacerbating insults. My kids played a game once. It was a contest, and it started naturally. They started calling each other names and seeing how bad they could get. And I remember a couple of them. You tepid cup of cocoa with the scum all wrinkled on top of it. You soggy piece of burnt toast with orange juice spilled all over it. And things of that sort. They must have gone on a half hour with some friends, and I wish I'd had a tape recorder or that I'd written it all down because it was too good to lose. Or let's try some execrable expletives or some salacious slang, although we can do it without being obscene, and that's the most fun, staying just this side of propriety. I saw a joke where a policeman was holding a mild little man in front of the judge, and he was saying he had this dirty bumper sticker on his car. It said, Eschew obfuscation. Well, if you know the meaning of those words, it means avoid confusion. And yet they sounded, you see, as if they were not nice words. So okay, you troglodytes, you bashy bazooks, how about a few lists, maybe, with explanations, some made-up words? How would a skunk swear? Better yet, use the words in a story. Another idea. When did you use some vivid language when you had an otter? Did you ever use it and nobody minded? Why not? Tell us. It'll tickle our catastrophes.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.